everyone, welcome again to another edition of Seekers of Meaning, the podcast of Jewish Sacred Aging. I'm your host, Rabbi Richard Adress. We are very, very honored to have as our guest today on today's edition of Seekers of Meaning. I want to jump right into it and welcome from coming to us live from Israel for a return visit, an old friend of Seekers of Meaning, Alden Salaby, to talk about his brand new book, This Precious Life, part of a whole collection from Alden, published by the CCAR Press. It's available now through the CCAR Press, ccrnet.org, ccrpress.org, and of course, most likely through the great God, Amazon. And all the other contact information to get the books will be on the screen as we post this. Alden, hello from New Jersey. How are you feeling? How are you today?
Well, hello from Jerusalem. I feel great, and I'm honored to be on this podcast again. It's really great to see you.
Oh, it's good to see you, and I just hope you're well and safe in Yerushalayim with all the craziness and the pandemic. This Precious Life, part of your, as you call it, the trilogy. First of all, let me just jump right to a sincere Todah Rabbah, because you've been very, very nice to allow Jewish Sacred Aging to post some of your poetry around certain issues, and I've used it in some services, but I appreciate it, and so do the people who follow us. So thank you very, very much. This brand new book, it just seems a little different to me when I read it than the previous ones. But you have this lovely, lovely dedication to a colleague of ours, Peter Noble of blessed memory. Could you just, because I know there are colleagues who will watch this and listen to this who knew Peter. Could you just talk us to a little bit about that relationship you had with him?
Yeah. So I thanks for asking about that. I wanted to dedicate the book to really my deep love for Peter, for those of you also who serve in the rabbinate, really selflessly, and also to Hera Person, the current CEO of CCAR, who has been a mentor. So my relationship with Peter started when my family went to Beth Emet, the Free Synagogue in Evanston. And Peter, from the very start, was a big promoter of my writing. In fact, pushed me to start writing Jewish fiction again, none of which I've published. And he gave me an amazing piece of advice that I use regularly. He said, Alden, as your liturgy goes out there, there are going to be people who ask you to pray for them. In other words, be a surrogate for their prayers. Don't do it. Teach them to pray in their own voice. Give them prayers that they can use themselves. But don't put yourself between a human and God. That's not your role. It's not our role. Be mindful that that's something that could happen. And, you know, as a result, part of my mission is to empower other people to pray in their own words. But in other words, put me out of business. Write your own prayers, you know, from your heart. And until you're comfortable with that, I have a few words to offer as well.
This is the book is organized a little differently. You write about the experience of our ancestors as inspiration, and you've been inspired by divine encounters. That's a pretty meaty, you know, sentence that you what is, explain that to me. How did you organize this book around the encounters of the divine?
So, very insightful observation. My writing journey has taken a turn here in Jerusalem, doing the learning I do. You know, I call Jerusalem the Las Vegas of Jewish learning, meaning it's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can find, you know, Torah learning in Jerusalem. So I live in the Las Vegas of Jewish learning. And I'm so I'm doing a lot of study, and so my work has really been influenced by the Torah learning I've done here.
Yeah. And talk to me, because you write a little bit about in the beginning of the book that you're writing this. I think you say from your study overlooking the old city in the middle of a pandemic. I got to ask you this because we're all still in the middle of all this thing. How has the pandemic influenced what you've written?
So the pandemic has created topics, shall we say, or moments for new kinds of prayers. For example, I wrote a prayer called The Blessing of Faces, which is about being on Zoom and seeing all these faces arrayed, in group view or whatever it's called. I've written, prayers for the first responders and, prayers for being in isolation. So it's opened up a whole new set of topics, and frankly, it's deepened my study and deepened the amount of time I've had to do Torah study work, and so that's also influenced my work. I'd say more on a undertone level, on a the influence underneath level. But at the heart of it, there's just all sorts of new topics we need covered in prayer.
So you write in the book sections on encounters with God from the text and encounters with God from the world, and you do a lot of in the beginning with matriarchs and patriarchs, and then you have this thing of one of the poems in the beginning, if I'm not mistaken, is called "The Next Garden," the next garden, and this idea, I mean, were you talking about this fantasy of the garden, or to channel the old Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young record, getting back to the garden? And I think the last line was about being readmitted to the garden. Could do you do you, can you just riff on that a little bit? What did you kind of have in
Yeah.
mind?
Well, what would I do differently? If I was let into the garden, if the garden was opened, how would we be different? The garden story, in many respects, is about relationship between God and human. God, Chava and Adam and Eve sin, or they eat the fruit. And the next thing that happens is God's in the garden saying, "Where are you?" Well, that could be a physical question, like I'm hiding, in the bushes, or it can be a spiritual question. Where are you? What happened that you chose to do this thing? Are you going to own up, if you will, to the mistake that you made? And so it's a spiritual question. In so many words, it's what might I do differently in relationship to God if I was actually let back into this place where we are told we are there to tend it and to protect it? How would I be?
It's and as I read it really triggered, like, this is a great high holiday sermon, not only for Parashah Bereishit, but what would you do? We live so much of our life in the land of regret. I should have done this, I could have done that, and if only I had done that. But the idea of twisting that in your poem of, well, suppose I was allowed back in, what would it be like? What would it be like? And it's almost like a maybe this is, and whether you had this in mind or not, a rehearsal for death. I mean, Genesis 3 is a rehearsal for death, but the whole idea of the garden and what that means, also in the concept of shleimut, of wholeness and coming back into oneself. I mean, that's the beauty of your poetry, and what you write, because you can weave it in so many, and it's very obviously it's going to be very, very, very personal. I mean, you have a poem called "Dear Brother, Dear Sister," "Dear Brother, Sister," and I'm wondering if the whole idea of using prayer or liturgy or ritual in the sense of reconciliation. Every colleague who will watch this or listen to this has had encounters with members of congregants, sometimes our own families, where you have this estrangement and this hope for reconciliation. And I'm wondering if instead of, you know, talking, a ritual or using a prayer like this could be used, a poem like this could be used as a vehicle to encounter some sense of reconciliation. Did you have that in mind, or?
Yeah, absolutely, spot on. The intent with some of my work is to just help open that crack a little bit. You know, that piece that might be open to healing, that might be open to forgiveness, that might be open to a different way of being. And in some sense, this kind of prayer is a way to pose the question to someone without posing it in a threatening way. Like, are you ready to reconcile with your brother, your sister, your mother, your father, your child? It's a tough question. But read this prayer with me. Let's think about this. How might it be different? How might we envision a different way of being?
There may be a person who will listen to this or watch this who would think, how do I get started? What inspires you, Alden? How do you begin to sit down? Is it an idea pops into your head? Do you see something on the street? How do you get that sense of inspiration? Because it's so powerful, and the prayers are so meaningful, and you're so prolific. So, how do you do that?
I don't think my instinct about what to pray about is so much different than that of the common person. There's some basic topics, you know, health, healing, love, family, safety, divine encounter in the sense of opening myself to radical amazement. There aren't that many topics, and they've all received some treatment or another. I think it's really about my practice of tuning in to those topics and tuning into language that might touch other folks. So my writing something is the last stage of every morning following up a particular routine, which is prayer, meditation, reading from inspiring readings, journaling. And when I'm done with that process, let's say I'm just more spiritually aligned and attuned with the topics of the day and the topics that motivate us as people.
Do you try to write every day?
There was a point in my writing where it was flowing so much that I was writing 2, 3, 5 or more pieces a day. I have moved in, you know, the writing has evolved, so I've moved in a different direction. I'm spending a lot more time studying sacred text as a motivation for writing. So I'm not pushing the writing right now. I'm actually, thankfully, CCAR is entrusting me with yet a fourth volume, and it's going to be based on specifically on individual words of Torah. So I'm spending a lot of time studying Torah and in preparation for writing that book. The rest of the time, it is inspired by the moments, things that happen, yom day to day, fires in California, the George Floyd murder, those things that that day to day need a liturgical response caused me to take an immediate turn to writing. But I'm in a much different phase. You know, I'll say, Richard, for a while I was writing to save my own spiritual soul. You know, I was writing to get past, you know, a variety of tragedies and moments that were very difficult. My two closest male friends died in a period in which my wife passed away, in which a period of there were fires and gun violence. It was a period unparalleled for me in difficulty. So I'm past that point. You know, I used to, you know, think that my grief, in a sense, was my, that was my smicha. You know, that was my ordination. I've seen so much grief that I am qualified to write prayer. Today, it's my joy that's my smicha. It's, you know, I feel so much joy in living, in being in connection with God and the Jewish people that I'm really pouring forth. And that comes from a different place. That doesn't come from the need to write every day. That comes from the desire to create a legacy of tefillah for our people.
Well, that you're doing, no question about that. And I find it fascinating also that, you know, again, you give testimony to the fact that prayer and the ritual is a transformative or transitional a vehicle to move you from one stage of life to another. And now it's the study of Torah, Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam, is now embracing the next stage of your life, which is a fascinating spiritual journey. You know, we take so much time to talk about the wilderness experience as the ultimate metaphor for the Jew. And it's as if you're passing through one sense of the wilderness to another sense of a different land. I mean, and using prayer and the liturgy as the vehicle to do that. Just, you know, a riff.
Yeah, I'd love to speak to that because it's a beautiful comment. B'Shem Omro, teaching in the name of a teacher at the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies, where I'm the liturgist in residence, Rav Mike Foyer, he will say, you can't return redeemed. That is, there's no redemption without the exile. There's no home without the wilderness. You gotta go into the wilderness before you come home. And I think that perhaps, you know, mirrors what has happened for me.
Yeah, and why the wilderness experience is such the most powerful metaphor that we have. I mean, you write so much of the personal and understanding your own journey. There's a couple of poems I just want to refer to, if that's okay with you.
Please.
This is lovely poem that speaks to me a little bit of, again, the Genesis 3. It's from the beginning of the book called Where Are You? And, you know, we in Jewish Sacred Asia, we talk sometimes when we do workshops in congregations and with baby boomers and stuff who are having to, in many ways, assimilate letting go or understanding that their children are now independent, free-thinking adults, which for those of us of a certain age said, you know, how did this happen? You know, how did you get to be 45, you know, and on your own? And you don't need me like you used to. But this is what I thought of as soon as when I read this poem. It goes, where are you, my son? Where are you, my daughter? Have you left me alone in the garden? Or are you hiding because you cannot bear the guilt of failing yourself and me? When I made you, when the breath of God became the breath of life itself, I didn't know quite how painful losing you could feel. I mean, that That is so many things there. It's growth. It's differentiation. It's the loss of a child. What? Could you just walk us through that poem a little bit? I mean, if you can, just, you know, it sounds so personal.
Well, it's interesting. That's the Ayeka moment. That's exactly God walking in the garden saying, you know, where are you? And realizing that sometimes the answer is, you know, I'm not here for you. I'm not there the way you'd like me to be. So this was really an attempt to take that divine encounter, which was a hiding, if you will, of Chava and Adam, of Adam and Eve, and take it from God's perspective. You know, what does it mean to have my children hide from me? Frankly, you just added another layer of meaning to the piece for me with your interpretation of it, because I really hadn't thought of it that way. And I love that. It's beautiful. You know, I hear people talk about some of my pieces, and really? I didn't hear it quite that way. Thank you. Thanks for, you know, giving me a midrash on my own piece. So.
But that's the beauty of your stuff. Because it speaks to people on a personal level and allows them, you know, it's the blessing, the Torah blessing of La'asok b'divrei Torah. The text allows the text to speak to each individual on their own neshama, which is a gift. I mean, you know, that's like a good prayer does that, but your prayers, I mean, your poetry is prayer. There's another prayer that just, that you write in this, in the book, This Precious Life. Again, now available through the CCAR Press. And it, you know, for as you're studying Torah, it's Chaye Sarah, Prasha Chaye Sarah, right after the Akedah. So I'd just like you to comment on this, because this is a really beautiful and touching piece of liturgy. And I'll shut up. Let me read this. It's called Sarah Imenu. Why should I be surprised that you tied my son, my only son, to an altar? That you could argue for a city, but not for your own child. After all, you sold me as a wife to other men twice, sending me into the den of Pharaoh and the den of Avimelech to save your own life. I am a matriarch, strong and unassailable. Laughter is my shield and my dagger. Here I am, the mother of a nation, the mother of a people, a prophet of Israel. Come with me, fellow travelers, where faith and doubt meet in service to the one God, the only God, the source of all. How angry is Sarah in that poem?
Sarah's pretty angry in that poem, and pretty, I think, more to the point, Sarah is pretty honest in that poem. Now, there is a story of that piece, and I mentioned it in the acknowledgments. Rabbi Sonia Karen Pills, who is the editor of CCIR Press, said that my original Sarah Imenu piece did not resonate for her. And it really didn't resonate for me. It was one of the weakest pieces that I submitted. And she said, you know, I'd like to sit down with you and have a conversation about my perspective of Sarah Imenu, you know, Sarah, our mother. And we had this conversation, and as I was hearing her talk, literally I wrote this piece as Sonia was talking about the very complexities of the life of this matriarch. Two things I want to say. A humble liturgist will understand the limits of his spiritual experience. I have at times understood that I didn't understand the emotional content I was talking about. And I sought help. In this particular case, help sought me out. I really didn't understand the emotional content around this matriarch that many women feel until we had this conversation. And then it was very, very clear that, you know, her role as a matriarch was to be a rock for this man who wasn't always the nicest guy, that actually our tradition paints beautifully, but doesn't always deserve it.
Before we start running out of time, I just want to just ask you a comment. Towards the end of the book of poetry, you have this a poem on renewal. And it's sort of like, to me, like a nice coda as you conclude the volume. The idea that you have to take time for your own self, and that we are a source of our own renewal. And hearing what you said before, is this really, if you could take a look at this, is this sort of like autobiographical? Is this like you writing to yourself of saying, you know something, I've been through a lot of, I'm moving into a different stage of my life, and the secret of it rests in my own neshama, not someplace else? Or am I totally off base?
That was not what I was thinking when I wrote it, but when you say that, it totally resonates for me. You're like holding up a mirror for me in that piece. It's beautiful. You know, we played with various titles for this book, and one of the titles we played with was This Resilient Life. And decided that it was nice, it was catchy in the language of the day, but it may or may not be the language of tomorrow. So we went with This Precious Life, which I love as a title, but that piece, Renewal, is absolutely, you know, with the idea of resilience. And I think resilience is woven throughout this piece, this book, which is why that was a reasonable title for the book to consider. It is indeed about finding resilience through relationship with divine encounter. And yes, I'm going to say it. God is right here, right now. That's the ultimate message of this book. All we have to do is open ourselves up to the idea that you, all of us, can and will encounter the divine. And something miraculous will happen.
Even if we did not know that it was there all the time. So, I know, thank you. Alden, This Precious Life, CCAR Press, the latest offering from easily the most powerful liturgist, poetess, poet, writer, prayer writer that we have today. And we just wish you continued success and joy and peace. And most of all, in this day and age, health. Hopefully everything will clear up and you'll be back in the States in the not too distant future. And just write well, be well, stay well. Alden, thank you very, very, very much. And shalom, hitraot, lehitraot.
Stay true. Thanks for having me.
To all of you, again, thank you for watching and listening to today's edition of Seekers of Meaning, the podcast edition of Jewish Sacred Aging. You can remember now that we're also available to come to you on Roku. And how you get that, you visit bit.ly/JSAROKU to add it to your Roku box. We welcome your comments. You can send those comments to me at rabbiaddress@jewishsacredaging.com. We invite you to visit our Facebook page, Jewish Sacred Aging on Facebook. And if you'd like to continue, help us continue the work of these podcasts and Jewish Sacred Aging, you go to the homepage, jewishsacredaging.com, and click on the donate button. We will be grateful for any donation. They're tax-free. Just follow the directions. Seekers of Meaning is produced in the Broadcast Center of Lubetkin Global Media Companies in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. And we give a big shout out and todah rabah to our producer, Steve Lubetkin. I'm your host, Rabbi Richard Address. And again, I look forward to greeting you on the next edition of Seekers of Meaning, the TV show and podcast of Jewish Sacred Aging. To all of you, todah, shalom, the Heathrow. Stay safe, stay healthy, everyone. Thank you. Thank you again, Alden.